Economic Indicators.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Welcome to the Morning Open, where we look at the broader economy as trading gets kicked off for the day. We're about 20 minutes in, so where's Wall Street? Markets are mixed right now. The NASDAQ up about, a tenth of a percent. The S&P down a tenth. And the Dow down about 10 points at 10,281. European shares up about a third of a percent. And Asian markets closed mostly lower today. President Obama says jobs are a high priority in his administration. And to prove he's serious about creating them, he's putting together a forum on jobs at the White House next month.
We all know that there are limits to what government can and should do, even during such difficult times. But we have an obligation to consider every additional responsible step that we can to encourage and accelerate job creation in this country.
President Obama just moments ago at the White House. Let's get some reaction this morning from David Weiss, chief economist at Standard & Poor's, with us live from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Mr. Obama made these comments before taking off for this week-long trip to Asia. Unemployment, we know, is above 10%. How much good can this do?
Well, we'll find out. Generally, though, it takes a long time for government to create jobs. We certainly found that out with this new stimulus package. And the other point is we're already spending, almost $1 trillion between the last two stimulus packages. Can we really afford to spend that much more?
Right. And we just got word that new claims for unemployment benefits fell last week by more than expected, 502,000 seasonally adjusted. We heard from the head of the World Trade Organization, David, saying rising unemployment is the biggest threat to free trade and could spark greater protectionist policies. Is that a bunch of hyperbole, do you think?
No, I think that's always the case. Basically, trade is always a jobs issue. When times are good, nobody really pays that much attention to it. It's hard to get much political traction. But when times are bad, it's easy for the demagogues to go out there and blame the foreigner. Because, after all, foreigners don't vote.
Right, right. David Weiss from S&P, we do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Walmart today said profits rose 3.2%. But the company says sales at stores open at least a year fell slightly. Let's bring in Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, who's with us live from our Washington bureau. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
So these numbers are seen as sort of an indicator for the economy. Why?
Well, Walmart is the world's largest retailer. So retail analysts can learn a lot about what kind of shape consumers are in by looking at Walmart's numbers. Now, Ken Perkins of Retail Metrics has been crunching the numbers, and he says they show consumers are in bad shape.
And I think there's a lot of people that are just really getting by. So, there's not a lot of discretionary income available to those lower-end consumers that shop at Walmart.
Nancy, are these numbers all that bad?
Well, Perkins says, keep things in perspective. We are comparing this year's sales with the same time last year, and guess what? Walmart sales for the third quarter of 2008 were actually up about 3%. So Perkins says today's numbers are disappointing, but keep in mind they are being compared to numbers from last year that were very good. And Walmart isn't the only indicator out there. Nordstrom is going to be reporting its numbers after the market closes today.
All right. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer and our Washington bureau. Nancy, thanks.
You're welcome.
Chipmaker Intel agreed to pay rival Advanced Micro Devices $1.25 billion to settle antitrust and patent disputes. Going forward, Intel will abide by a set of business practice provisions, and AMD will drop its antitrust complaints. And Hewlett-Packard is buying 3Com, a tech company that makes networking equipment. It's a more than $2.5 billion deal. 3Com stocks are up by 30% or more today. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, November 12th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Executives from General Motors have been in Germany this week seeking state aid for the company's struggling European division. But as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports, they got the cold shoulder instead.
Germany had offered $6 billion of aid if GM sold its European division to the Canadian parts maker Magna. Magna had promised to protect German jobs. But that deal is off. GM is keeping the company. And so, says the German government, the $6 billion is off the table too. GM is not getting any cash from the German taxpayer. But, says David Bailey of the Coventry Business School, GM can look elsewhere.
The danger here, actually, is that GM touts its business around European capital, saying, give us a subsidy and we'll keep production in your country, and engages in a divide-and-rule tactic.
He says half of GM's 50,000 European jobs are in Germany. The German government may have little choice but to cough up in the end. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The dollar lost ground today against a surprise currency, the Chinese yuan. Washington and Asian governments have argued for months that China needs to appreciate its currency, and there are signs that may happen. Just a question of when. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
China's central bank signaled it could let its currency appreciate. The currency's exchange rate does not fluctuate because it's pegged strictly to the dollar. David Cohen is with Action Economics in Singapore.
During the height of the crisis, the dollar was strengthening against most other currencies on a flight to safety, and now the dollar is now weakening.
A weak RMB or yuan helps Chinese exporters, but it also creates problems for Beijing. It makes other exporting countries less competitive and therefore furious at China, and it creates inflation risks. Cohen thinks appreciation is coming, it's just a question of when. And central bankers aren't exactly direct about their intentions.
You know, they call it transparency, but doesn't mean they have to be clear at what they're saying.
In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Four of the top five best-performing cities in America are located in Texas. That's according to a report out this week by a think tank. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports the Lone Star State has done so well, in part because it missed the last boom.
For the past decade, economists at the Milken Institute have been ranking America's cities based on their ability to create and sustain good jobs. But never before has one state swept four of the five top spots.
It's a remarkable performance. We've never had one state dominating the list that way.
Ross Duvall is director of regional economics at the Milken Institute. He says many Texas cities benefited from high energy prices. And compared to other states, Texas largely missed the real estate bubble.
Texas is also has a very favorable business climate.
But back in 2005, three Florida cities rode the real estate boom to the top of this list. Before that, it was Silicon Valley's turn to shine. This year, both state cities have dropped precipitously in the rankings.
I would say that these surveys are somewhat dangerous.
George Erichchuk is an economist at the Upjohn Institute. He says instead of chasing the last boom, cities are better off trying to attract and retain a talented, innovative workforce. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
The Glass-Steagall Act was passed way back in the 1930s and repealed 10 years ago today, November 12, 1999. The law was supposed to keep retail banks from doing investment banking and vice versa. Now, there are those who'd like to see it reinstated, as Elisa Roth explains.
Before Glass-Steagall, banking was a free-for-all. Jeff Madrick's a senior fellow at the New School, and he says there was all kinds of funny business.
Banks would lend money to the companies and then sell shares to the public or tout the shares to the public. They would have all kinds of investment vehicles that were suspect.
The Glass-Steagall Act stopped that, but by 1999, there were so many loopholes, the law really didn't do much anymore. Edward Kane is a finance professor at Boston College, and he says the law was like the old walls you see around European cities.
We admire them and look at them as a relic of an age when there was simpler munitions and simpler ordnance.
He says there's no point in trying to reinstate the law because companies would just find a way around it again. But Madrick doesn't agree.
There are quite a few ways to break the industry up that I think could be very constructive and eliminate the likelihood of these crises again.
Like bringing back basic retail banking and forcing investment banks to have more capital reserves. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Many of the smart guys on Wall Street underestimated the severity of the mortgage crisis. Some of them now are making sure they don't miss anything else. From New York, Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson tells us about the corporate debt cliff we still don't have a parachute for.
Companies are just like most Americans. When they need to buy something or even pay their people, they break out the credit card. Steve Miller tracks corporate debt for Standard & Poor's. He says, just like the rest of us, companies pay more or less interest on their debt depending on how likely they are to pay it back. The really dicey ones go to what's called the leveraged loan market.
Like in the mortgage market, you have the prime borrowers who are at the top of the food chain, and then the subprime that tend to be the riskiest borrowers. That's where the leveraged loan market fits in. It's for the risky most spectrum of borrowers who are still performing.
Leveraged loans have another less polite name, junk. And in the boom years, companies loaded up on it.
Most of the debt got put in place in 2005 through 2007, and they tend to be seven-year maturities, would come due in 2012 to 2014.
To give you an idea of just how big the bill is going to be, Miller says $10 billion of that junk debt comes due next year, and it gets exponentially worse every year after that.
There's $1.5 trillion worth of outstanding leveraged loans and leveraged bonds. $1.5 trillion, a very big number.
Bram Smith directs the Loan Syndications and Trading Association. He says it's unlikely all the companies that borrowed that money will be able to pay it back on time.
Treasurers and CFOs now who are focusing on that are doing what they can to start chiseling away at their own individual amortization and pushing it forward.
What he means is they're looking desperately for ways to delay payback time by extending or refinancing the loans. Those that can't do that may not survive. But before you head for the nearest cliff, S&P's Steve Miller says we have been here before.
When the market fell out of bed in 1989 and 1990, there was a similar wall of maturities coming due in the mid-90s. For a while, there was a lot of anxiety around it and people doing transactions to try and push out some of those maturities. But then when the stock market recovered and the economy got going again, companies found buyers to take properties on and reduce the debt.
And they went looking for cash in the IPO market. They took their companies public. Miller and Smith say IPOs could be a savior this time as well. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Finally, California is about to start regulating big screen TVs to save energy. Other states looking at doing it as well. But a Rasmussen poll shows a majority asked say buying the TV they want is more important than energy conservation. 53%. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.